Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach Chamber 360. On September 10th, 2021, live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce has been serving the community since 1941. It is an association of businesses, other entities, and individuals organized to encourage a strong local economy and quality of life by promoting commerce, sound government, and an informed membership and community.
I'm your host, Joe Terry. You can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose. This is what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. Joining us as co-host, the CEO and president of the Manhattan Beach Chamber, Kelly Stroman. Hey, Kelly, how are you today?
Good morning and happy Friday, Joe. I'm well.
Yes.
It's Friday.
Very good.
Happy.
It's Friday.
Yeah, and it is, and you put a lot of extra oomph into that purpose this morning when you said purpose.
Oh, Kelly, we've talked. I have been on a journey these last, nearly 5 years. 5 years it has been that I've been on my own, running my own businesses, and quite a journey. And I've just been employed by an amazing company. I'm so excited. Just started on Tuesday. Started on my son's birthday. It's really cool.
Well, we're so happy for you. I know it has been a journey. And congratulations to you, and happy belated birthday to your son.
Yes. Oh, it's wonderful. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Times are good. Yes.
Maybe next week after you announce it officially, you can tell us a little bit more about what you're doing. So I know you're going to do a big announcement somewhere else. So I won't make you spill the beans quite yet. All right. Well, in true keeping with Chamber Life, I have had a very busy week. Do I ever say it's been a dull week? Have I ever said that, Joe?
I let me see. Let me think. No.
Oh my gosh! You know what? Was it Johnny Carson in Ed McMahon who said, "How busy was it?" Or how
was it?
What was the phrase? Yes. Yeah. Like you need to go. How busy was it, Kelly?
Kelly,
was that
the
those
best
two?
Of Manhattan is coming. Don't you have things to do?
I have a lot to do. Have you voted yet for the Best of Manhattan? We are in the voting phase of the award show.
My wife and I are going over the ballot now.
Okay. And can I just say this election's a lot funner than the California recall election on Tuesday, but I just had to say that. This is a fun this is a fun way to vote. So yes, for those of you who are listening who do not know what Joe and I are talking about, the annual Best of Manhattan Awards that the Chamber produces are on October 21st, about 6 weeks away. They'll be at the beautiful Westriff Hotel from 5 to 9 p.m. We start with a fun, festive cocktail reception. We're going to do a little walk down memory lane with the 80th anniversary of the Chamber also. And then as we get into the sit-down dinner and the awards, we have 16 awards to give out this year, a few of which are not open for public vote. Like we have the first time ever we are doing a Hall of Fame award, inducting somebody into the Hall of Fame, which will be announced in a few weeks after the voting period has ended, even though that's not a public vote. We don't want to announce that quite yet, but there are several categories. that you can vote on for your favorite and the best of business in Manhattan Beach. I'm going to read off the categories. I won't read off the finalists this week. I did think I did that last week. But anybody who wants to vote or purchase a ticket to the show, you can bounce over to manhattanbeachchamber.com/BOM as in Best of Manhattan, and vote and share it with your friends and colleagues and purchase a ticket to find out who wins that night as we announce the winners live on October 21st. So the categories are women-owned business, small and mighty, healthy living, who called the doctor, home sweet home, local love for Manhattan Beach. That is a new award, and it's more of a personal award, not about a business, but who, what individual or family just loves Manhattan Beach so much. Their name is synonymous with Manhattan Beach. New business of the year, pay it forward, dine and be, making a difference, and the big best of Manhattan award. So we have all of those are open for vote. Then, like I said, we'll have a Hall of Fame Award. We'll have the traditional Bob Maestral Local Legend Award, where, as I announced, the Chamber Member of the Year, and do a special recognition for all first responders. So with that being said, it's the biggest night of the year, really, in Manhattan Beach and for the Chamber. So you don't want to miss it. And if you have to miss it, then at least you can vote and be a part of deciding who gets those awards. So very exciting.
That's right.
The votes are coming in. The voting period is open until September 21st. Why does it end 1 month before the awards? Because these days with the supply chain, everything takes a little longer to make. So we have to have a few extra weeks to get those trophies in hand. The supply chain just isn't the same these days. So anyways, we're super excited. Everybody, please vote. You do not have to be in Manhattan Beach. You do not have to be a member. You don't have to be a resident to vote. It's open to anybody, anywhere, to vote for your favorite businesses in Manhattan Beach. So very excited about that.
Right. Fantastic.
I want to say something that's so important. I want to make sure I get this in before we get to our guest today. Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Is the 20th anniversary of 9/11.
Yes.
And, wow, I mean, I remember exactly where I was when I heard the news, you know, of the first plane hitting the tower in New York. I'm sure you do, too. Do you remember where you were, Joe, at that moment?
I was at home, just about to go to work. And immediately after, got a call from my manager. No one's coming into work today because we worked in a 11-story building. All towers throughout the country were basically emptying and telling people not to come in because they didn't know what kind of an attack it was. It was pandemonium all over the country.
It was my brother actually was on a flight, and there, you know, because all flights had to be were grounded immediately, right? They had to land as quickly and safely as possible. And so he tells a very interesting story of, you know, being en route from the Midwest out to actually to California, and having to make an immediate landing in Las Vegas. Very interesting experience for him. But I think we all have our stories in our very heartfelt memories of 9/11, and not just that day, but the residual effects. But tomorrow at 9 a.m., the public is encouraged and welcome to gather at the corner of 15th and Valley Drive in Manhattan Beach, which is on the corner where the fire department and police department station, you know, the whole big building is. Coincidentally, right across the street from the Chamber of Commerce, too. There will be a beautiful ceremony. There's going to be a procession. There's going to be honoring the fallen and all first responders. But everybody is welcome to attend. 9 a.m., the corner of 15th and Valley. I have been to it every year that they have done it, and it is quite a wonderful ceremony. And I'm sure this year will be you know, just even more special. So please join us tomorrow morning for that. And then also happening this weekend is a fundraiser that it happens every year, and called Tour de Pure, and it raises money for pancreatic cancer and other related cancers. It's a wonderful stationary bikes at the pier, hundreds of stationary bikes at the Manhattan Beach Pier on Sunday. You ride basically to fight cancer and raise millions of dollars for pancreatic cancer research and to support families. And on Saturday night, as they set up, there's a really cool pre-event called Ride the Night. And that is a dark with neon lights and headphones, silent to the outer public, but they've got the headphones on and they ride to fight cancer and raise even more money on Saturday night. So head down to the pier, Manhattan Beach Pier, on Saturday night to check it out, and then again on Sunday morning. If you're not riding, that's okay. There's a lot of activities, tons of entertainment, big names coming out for it. I don't want to steal anybody's thunder, but just go down and check it out. It's quite fun, and you can walk around the bikes, and you can take your water gun and squirt somebody if you want, and all of the above. You've got everybody riding. You've got all the teams out there. You've got the lifeguards ride, the police ride. Residents, business leaders, everybody rides, and it's just a lot of fun. We have a big weekend coming up with all that, and then next week on Tuesday, my last announcement is we have, I love when we get to cut a ribbon and open a business, especially these days, and as the Manhattan Village Shopping Center continues to grow and develop and open all of their new buildings, we have another new business that is opening on Tuesday called Sweet Greens, and they open their doors at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday, and you are welcome to go enjoy a healthy kind of bowl type of salad and food. And for every bowl that is purchased on opening day, they immediately make a duplicate bowl and donate it out to food insecure groups and charities in Los Angeles that same day. So thousands of food bowls potentially are going out to the food insecure in Los Angeles. So the more people that come and show up on Tuesday for the opening, the more we get to feed people who really need that meal. So those are my big announcements. Right. A lot always going on, and lots of recognition, memory, awards, a fun way to vote, new business opening, and a way to raise money for a fabulous cause to fight cancer. So can't never a dull moment in Manhattan Beach. And I just have to, even have a good transition, but I just have to say I am so excited about our guest today, and I know you're going to love the conversation, but really appreciate this person for joining us this morning and taking the time, because he is just one of those remarkable people that has landed in Manhattan Beach that we are so fortunate to have.
It's wonderful. I mean, we have lots and lots of technology in the South Bay, obviously Silicon Beach, as many refer to it. There's Silicon Valley up north near San Francisco, but here in Los Angeles, there's a huge contingent of companies and activity, and it's wonderful to talk to someone that's right in the middle of that. Thank you. Thank you, Kelly. This is going to be exciting.
It's always
Kelly,
my pleasure.
Who's our guest today?
Okay, Joe, our guest today is Clarence Wooten. Clarence is a serial tech entrepreneur who creates and builds startups. Presently, he is an entrepreneur in residence at X, formerly known as Google X, Alphabet's moonshot factory, where he works with talented teams to create radical new technologies to solve some of the world's hardest problems. Clarence had a track record of success spanning back to 1999 when his debut internet startup ImageCafe.com was acquired by Network Solutions, VeriSign. Image Cafe became the default instant website platform used by millions of domain name purchasers. In 2010, Clarence moved to Silicon Valley from Maryland, his home state, and started a string of startups, including Arrived, Venture Fund IO, and Progressly, an enterprise SaaS startup that was acquired by Box in 2018. In addition to Clarence's work at Google X, Clarence has focused on changing the complexion of tech through revitalized ventures. His venture studio, Pitch Competition, two organizations he co-founded to bring social equity to tech. Clarence credits his career balance with being the proud father of two incredible college-age daughters, Jordan Avery, who will also be the best two startups he ever created. I love that. Clarence now resides in the sand section of Manhattan Beach, from Maryland to Silicon Valley to Manhattan Beach. Clarence Wooten, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for moving to Manhattan Beach, doing what you do, and joining us this morning.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and happy Friday. Thank you. And
happy Friday.
Now that I hear you read my bio, I realize Pitch Black does not read well in a bio. You know how domain names, you have to leave out a letter? So we decided to leave out the A in black and just spell it B-L-C-K. It's all good. It's exciting to be here, and thanks for having me.
Thank you. Well, Kelly was right. She knows me so well. I'm excited to have you because there's nothing more nothing more important to me to talk about, to shoot the breeze about than tech and tech entrepreneurs and the future, because the future is so bright for tech entrepreneurs. But it hasn't been that bright, Clarence, for underserved communities, communities of color in general. Some of the statistics on your website are just stark. So let's start with your background and how you got to be in this space where you said, okay, I can give back.
I'm going to say it's been a long road. I've watched the tech industry, particularly the internet industry, change over the years. I feel like when I first got into tech right out of undergrad, I'm dating myself, but in the early to mid-90s, it did not seem so, at least maybe I just wasn't aware, especially since I was doing it from Maryland. And Maryland's a pretty diverse state, at least in terms of African-American representation. I want to feel like it's 30% African-American at least. And so as a tech entrepreneur there, I did not totally feel that I was that much of a minority. And I think because I lived in the suburbs of D.C. and there were lots of friends who called themselves IT professionals, but they were really government contractors in tech. They were black. When the web came along and I started my first internet company in the late 90s, I did it from Maryland, and I did not realize I was that much of an anomaly. I even went to Silicon Valley to raise money, and in doing so in the late 90s, I felt a warmer reception in the late 90s, early 2000s than I did when I actually moved to Silicon Valley in 2010. The culture in Silicon Valley had changed. And so I have my own theory about what happened between 2000 and 2010 to change that culture, which I'm happy to share. But from 2010 on, it really did not feel like a hospitable place for, African-American entrepreneurs with dreams of going to Sand Hill Road and raising a bunch of money and doing a tech startup. It didn't feel hospitable. So, in order to overcome that, you can't if you want to be successful in anything in life, you can't let the lack of hospitality put you down. You have to figure out how to be successful despite it, and almost how to play the game so that you still have an opportunity, even if that game requires putting somebody else in the forefront of your own company so that you can raise the capital that's needed. And, so I resorted to every tactic that I needed to resort to in order to be successful. But, the time has come to change that, which is why I'm heavily motivated to kind of change the complexion of tech.
I have been in the South Bay, the South Bay of Los Angeles, since 91. And really, I have always felt, 1991, I have always felt welcome here in Southern California as an entrepreneur and as an entrepreneur of color. There's something uniquely multicultural about Los Angeles in general, and an appreciation of many cultures is built into the DNA of being in Los Angeles. And I think, it's just something that's different than San Francisco. Although highly, very multicultural, it wasn't true of Silicon Valley. I think I am. I applied to Apple 3 or 4 times. Apple was one of my targets. Mm-hmm. So I made that trip, that journey up north to apply to Apple about 3 or 4 times, and it just never quite worked out. There was something about that I think, you have a theory.
Well, yeah. So many people in Silicon Valley will tell you that Silicon Valley is diverse, but Silicon Valley is not diverse. It's very international, okay? But diversity is not just about people from different countries. And for me, as a Black American in this country, it's hard to see diversity when I don't see anybody who looks like me in a place. And when I moved to Silicon Valley, I moved to Palo Alto in 2010, and I noticed that the first time I had come to Silicon Valley to pitch investors was, I want to say it was the summer of 1998, which was for Image Cafe, the climate felt pretty welcoming. My law firm I was working with set up a bunch of meetings, and nothing felt weird in those meetings with those venture capitalists. But 2010, 11, and 12, it was a different place. And I think it was because Silicon Valley between 2000 and 2010 became an elitist culture. And I think it was a byproduct, and I hate to say it this way, but I think it may have been a byproduct of Google's early hiring practices. So in 2000, 2001, when Google was starting to print money and the tech community was able to see Google's rise, they had interesting hiring practices. Literally, if you did not go to Stanford, Harvard, MIT, they literally asked for your SAT scores when you applied. And if you didn't come from one of those environments, you would not land a job at Google in those early days. And because Google was extremely successful, I think Sand Hill Road, the venture capitalist, said, oh, maybe that's the formula. Maybe we have to make sure all our portfolio companies hire in the same way that Google hires. And it created a lot of, and this is just my theory, and it created a lot of sameness. It became very homogeneous, only a certain type of person. Even if you were white and you went to University of Alabama and you tried to get a job at Google, unless you knew someone there really, really well, you could forget about it, right? So it wasn't just – so that's what I mean by an elitist culture. And, if you've had no exposure to people of color or Black people in your inner circle, then, each time these companies raise money and hire, they rely on their internal employees to refer people in. And ultimately, you get a bunch of people you know, all from the, all with the same backgrounds. And so later on, you know, once they've had thousands of employees, when an African-American walks in the door to interview, there's lots of unconscious bias there that prevents them from making it through the slate of interviews and actually landing a role.
Now we fast forward to, as I say, the South Bay is different. There's a different vibe. What do you see and experience in the South Bay? You obviously made it your home that makes you so comfortable here.
You know, well, first I lived in Palo Alto for 8 years. And I would say I often describe Manhattan Beach as like Palo Alto, but on the ocean, but not all tech. And, you know, so, you know, well, first off, I'm a people person. So I'm always, and to a large extent, you get back what you put out into the universe in terms of your energy. And, you know, so I'm friendly. You know, I say hi to people. They say hi to me. And I think in the South Bay, I have noticed that people are very nice, very hospitable. They, you know, and I haven't lived here long. I literally just moved to Manhattan Beach in December. So I haven't even been here a year. But from the moment I got here, just walking around downtown Manhattan Beach, you know, people would say hello. They would smile. And it just – it felt like a warm environment. And I think it's because the sun is always shining here. And how can you be mad at that?
There's a special inner smile, Kelly, about – living near the ocean. It's the water. It makes human beings. There's no question about it.
You know,
Kelly, how many times have we talked about that?
Every week. I agree, and I agree with Clarence. You know, you can be having the craziest day, week, month, anything, and you look at that ocean, and it just brings your blood pressure down, you know, and makes your body
it
say,
does.
Ah. And what I love about Manhattan Beach, too, is, you know, the topography of Manhattan Beach, you get a little bit of the slope and the hills, so you get this very interesting perspective of the ocean, just, you know, kind of elevated. And I've always said that since I first arrived in Manhattan Beach in 1999, actually, I moved here. But when we were looking to purchase a home here, I was always so taken by how the ocean looked different here than at the time I was living down in Huntington Beach, right across the street from the ocean. So I had a different view. And I just love it here. It is beautiful. And I love hearing Clarence say that this area is very welcoming because we strive for that. And, of course, you know, my position at the Chamber of Commerce, we want everybody to feel welcome, and we want businesses to feel welcome, but that really comes from within with the residents and the business culture, too. So I love hearing that. And, I remember when I first met Clarence, I said, Clarence, why Manhattan Beach, you know? And then when I found out, you know, he lives just – I'm not going to tell everybody where you live, Clarence, but he lives very close to the Chamber, and, you know, he was, like, you know, looking out his window at the ocean when he was talking to me on the phone. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Well, yeah, he's got this great view. And then, of course, it you know, spoke volumes. And I'm really – I love that you feel so welcome here. That just really makes me feel good, too.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because I came here in the heat of the Bruce's Beach saga, right, to a certain degree continues. And I tried to be as active as possible, at least watching what the city was going to do and how they responded. And that part's been interesting. So you come to realize that everyone is not on the same page, even though – you know, you feel warm and welcome here, but there's an undercurrent for sure. So let's, you know, let's not forget that. But nonetheless, Manhattan Beach is a spectacular place. It's like you guys said, it's something about the ocean that makes you smile. And regardless of whether or not it's only 0.5%, because it is only 0.5% black in Manhattan Beach in terms of its residents. You know, I feel like we should still be here. Now, the great thing is Manhattan Beach is adjacent to all of L.A. And on weekends,
right,
Manhattan Beach feels like it's 10 to 15% black.
Which is great.
So it has a different feel, I'm going to say, Thursday through Sunday than it does the rest of the week. Yeah. But it feels like a more diverse place than it actually is because of the weekend traffic.
Right. No doubt.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, you know, that it is, you know, 0.5%, you know, and then that changes on the weekends. I agree with you. I just want to point out, too, that I think it was yesterday that the Bruce's Beach Bill, authored by Senator Bradford and co-authored by Supervisor Janice Hahn and Assemblyman Marasucci and Senator Ben Allen, has made it all the way through the California Senate and is on its way, as we are speaking, to the governor's desk for a signature. So I don't know if any of you caught that news yesterday, but it has. It's, you know, that's been a journey since, well, it's been a long journey, but particularly since last spring. And it's on its way to the governor's desk for a signature. So very interesting journey.
That's fantastic. It better get there before the recall. But, yes.
Right? Well, what's today? Flip. The 10th? We got 4 days.
That's right.
I think it only takes about, 2 seconds for a signature.
That's right.
Get that pin out. I was introduced, just real quick, Joe, I just want to say I was introduced
to
Clarence by Melissa Clinton. And, you know, Melissa Clinton's family had the unfortunate experience years ago of their house being firebombed. And when I was planning our Unity in the Community event last February, which was a product of the Manhattan Beach Chamber's Inclusion Committee, developing kind of a, at the time, of course, Zoom, a Zoom event to bring diverse cultures together. I had asked Melissa to be on the panel, and she couldn't. She's like, but there's this new person in town, and you need to meet him. So she immediately provided an introduction to Clarence, and, you know, the rest is history. But anyways, you know, Clarence, I love our conversations. And I don't know if we can talk about just real quick the welcome score, the welcome mat project, but that I know that was kind of one of the genesis of our conversations too. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, of course. I'm glad you brought that up. So, you know, as you mentioned in my bio, I run a venture studio. And really what a venture studio is, it's a startup that creates startups. And so we tend to work with diverse founders to create tech startups. And we just bring capital, and we also bring our experience as entrepreneurs. That's my partner and I and our team to sort of help accelerate the startups that we create and that we co-found with others. So one of those startups is called Welcome Score. And, you know, Welcome Score was created by an entrepreneur out of Atlanta. Her name is Brandy Smith. And she just wanted to know kind of a Yelp for belonging. You know, when you go into a place, you don't necessarily know if it's hospitable. I think a lot of this came off the heels of the last election. You know, 75 million people voted for a guy who, you know, definitely did not feel. I mean, I don't want to get into politics here, but to make a long story short.
No.
Let's just say he had a low welcome score. That's right. That's exactly correct. And I think a lot of people want to patronize places that have higher welcome scores, right? Part of the go-to-market was these special welcome mats from Welcome Score that we would literally give the businesses that want to, you know, show that they're welcome. And those welcome mats have a QR code on them, so that you could just point your phone at the welcome mat when you walk in and give it a score, and also give feedback, in a way that the ownership and management can respond to. so that they can, you know, become more welcoming if they're not as welcoming. And if they are, you know off the bat. So anyone with the Welcome Score app would pretty much know, you know, what communities they are welcome in based on other people's ratings of those communities, whether we're talking about the school system or whether we're talking about a coffee shop.
Wow. Definitely something that, you know, existing organizations like Yelp should definitely look at, and in terms of you've got to connect the cyber space to real space or meet space, as they say, and a welcome mat is an ideal way of doing that.
Yes. And so I reached out to Kelly at the Chamber of Commerce to really float it by Manhattan Beach Chamber members so we could pilot Welcome Score, use Manhattan Beach as one of the pilot locations.
Right. Fantastic. Wow. when you think of you're in Manhattan Beach, you're in Silicon Beach, as I like to call it, Southern California, and you're a venture studio, you realize there's a very, very vibrant venture community here. I mean, you know, on the west side in West Hollywood, Google has been here for many years. Facebook has been here for many years. Amazon is here on the west side. And then a ton of satellite tech companies. And in the space that I'm in the blockchain space, LA is brimming with new ideas and new startups. This is a great place for Revitalize. This is a great place.
It is. You know, LA is known as Silicon Beach, but I kind of look at it as Tinsel Tech, right? Because there's been a convergence between media and tech. For example, you go to the Sundance Film Festival, and instead of movie studios, even though they're there, you see, and I've gone, you know, several years, you see YouTube, you see Netflix, you see Amazon. It's become tech. And LA to me is Tinsel Tech. And so all of those companies are in the media business now, Facebook, Google, with YouTube, et cetera. And so, you know, they have significant presences here in LA, largely for that reason. I mean, LA has a vibrant tech scene. It's not going anywhere. If anything, with TikTok and Snapchat and everything else, you know, video and entertainment integration into tech will just, you know, become even more pervasive.
Right. Fantastic. Wow. And Manhattan Beach is the center. I have a pitch for you. I think this is the right time for me. I've got a pitch. Spacejanitor.space. That's our domain name. Top level domain dot space. Spacejanitor.space. The best janitors in the galaxy. The ideal business is one where demand is ever increasing and competition is limited or non-existent. Unfortunately, space waste is a hyper-growth industry, so we want to be the ultimate space junk waste disposal company. We clean space and dispose of all kinds of terrestrial wastes, including radioactive materials. What could be more fun? That's
wow.
My pitch.
Okay, well, that is an interesting space. I'll run it up the ladder at X, which is where I'm employed today.
One of the things,
see if we can build a moonshot
around
it.
If you saw, you know, you see a display of the planes in the sky over the United States on any one given day, and it looks like a swarm of bees, right? There's planes going in every which direction, but in space, There is no such organization. There's no one keeping track of it as well as they should be. It's very deadly and dangerous to go to space, not only because it's deadly and dangerous to go to space, but because there's so much stuff up there that's shouldn't be up there. So it's a big deal. I'm excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk. Thank you very much. We'll talk.
Joe, are you talking – you're talking real space, not cyberspace. I thought you were talking about
cleaning
up cyberspace.
No, there's a lot of space junk, Kelly. I'm talking real
stuff. Hey, there's never
I want to be
a
the
bad
best
idea,
janitor.
Right? Yeah. there's never a bad idea. I think the Jetsons would be very proud of you for trying to clean up space. Okay.
look, absolutely. I mean, you know, we talk about global warming. You're talking about space warming here. So that's, you know, we're going to have to fix that.
how do we incorporate Revitalize Studio, revitalizeventures.com? How do we incorporate Revitalize into the local sort of life of Manhattan Beach? I mean, how can ordinary businesses contribute and get involved? Obviously, Welcome Score is one, but how do you see that happening? Not here, but just around the world,
yeah,
around the country.
Sure. I have a great answer for that. Yeah. So we're actually getting ready to launch a new Revitalize site because. Yeah, typically, when you have a venture studios are usually supported by a fund in the same way that a venture fund is. Venture funds, you know, receive their capital from large institutional investors. However, there's something called crowdfunding. So at Revitalize, what we've been doing is we've been building a venture community, a community of individuals that believe that diverse tech matters and want to back the next black unicorn, so to speak. The unicorn is a term for a tech company with a $1 billion valuation. And so what we do, or what we plan to do with each of our startups, is crowdfund them. So we'll bring our own community to the table and raise the first $1 to $5 million through the crowd. And one way the community could get involved is by going to revitalizeventures.com and plugging in their email address so that they can stay up to speed with Revitalize Studio startups. So when we launch crowdfunding campaigns for each startup, they're aware and they can participate. And investment can be as small as a couple hundred bucks or, you know, several hundred thousand.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. That's how people can get involved.
There you go.
Yeah. Hey, I want to talk about how you landed at X, but I want to first jump back to young Clarence. Clarence, how old were you when, you know, you first kind of had that first dream of starting your own company, and what was it? You know, take us way back to young Clarence.
Yeah. You know, I want to say I was probably 12. I'm not sure if you guys remember this, but I remember shows like Dynasty and a show called Heart to Heart. And I was fascinated with mansions because, you know, I grew up in inner city Baltimore. There was no mansions in sight, but I was fascinated with mansions, and then I understood, you know, architects design those things. And so I became excited about architecture. And so probably from the age of 12 until about 19, you couldn't have told me I wasn't going to be an architect. I wasn't going to be the next Frank Lloyd Wright and start an architecture firm. And that's when I first – and also, throughout my high school years, we had moved from inner city Baltimore to a suburb called Ramblestown, which was predominantly Jewish at that time. And most of my Jewish friends' parents were all successful entrepreneurs
who ran law firms, accounting firms, you name it. And it was clear to me, and they were doing much better than my parents were financially. So I kind of connected those dots and realized that maybe I need to be an employer and not an employee. And, so I knew entrepreneurship was going to be in my path from a pretty early age.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what was your very first entrepreneurial effort, business, I should say?
I'm going to say it was shoveling snow, which is something foreign to people who grew up out here in sunny Southern California. But when I was in probably fourth, fifth grade, whenever there was a big snowstorm, and this was the time when I had also just gotten my first video game, an Atari 2600 video game system, which required these things, which the games were cartridges, which is foreign to people, but you had to go out and purchase cartridges to plug into the system to play games, and they were very expensive. I remember them costing like $30, $35. Whenever it would snow, this was my opportunity to go and shovel out some people's walkways to earn enough money to buy Pac-Man for my Atari. And so I feel like that was my first kind of, entrepreneurial effort, going around shoveling snow when it's, during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I support anything that supports Pac-Man and Atari. I remember those days. Remember Pong, playing Pong,
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And, the more you connected with the Pong, whatever, ball or dot, the faster it went, And now, oh, my gosh, look at where we are now. Pong and Pac-Man, Atari. Wow, we are dating ourselves, but hey, there's good to vintage. I'm not sure we're vintage, but whatever. I think I've mentioned to you before that we have a program at the Chamber called the Young Entrepreneurs Academy, otherwise referred to as YEA. It's a 24-week program that we take any student. Anywhere in the South Bay, grades 6 through 12, who have that entrepreneurial curiosity, spirit, idea, and teach them how to develop, brand, start, and pitch their business. what advice would you have for a young, entrepreneur who has ideas, who's just itching to do something? What advice would you give them?
First advice is remember that it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? And very rarely does any business plan survive first contact with customers, at least when you're building a tech company. So you have a hypothesis on what your customer wants. You go out and you build the product, you market it, and you hope they love it in the same way you think they're going to love it. But very rarely does that happen. And so you end up having to iterate a lot. So be prepared for that. Build something you're passionate about, because you're going to need that passion to sustain you when the business is difficult, when things aren't going your way, when things aren't going like you expected, when it's harder than you thought to raise money, or it's harder to land a partner. That passion is the only thing that's going to sustain you. And so just remember, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint, and focus on what your passions are, because if you are following your passion, it won't feel like work, and you're going to stick with it even when things get difficult.
Yeah, I know. I like that. Those are great words. Okay, so your marathon started shoveling snow, and now you are all the way at Google X. We're jumping. I know several years there, but how did you find yourself to become, as I say, an Xer?
Yeah, so my role at Google X is I'm an entrepreneur in residence, and it's not really the kind of job you apply for. It's the kind of, that they find you, And I started conversations with X in early 2020. And, you know, they reached out. I had a friend who worked at X in another role. And I believe, you know, she mentioned my name to make them aware. And so, yeah, so they reached out in early 2020 before COVID hit. And those conversations just kind of continued. They were more like conversations. I was intrigued because X is an intriguing place. You know, I didn't really quite realize early on that this was for a potential role. But I continue to maintain optionality, and we continue to have conversations. And probably 14, 15 interviews later, 18 months later, they made me an offer. And by then I had, you know, I could see the writing on the wall and was excited by the opportunity because, you know, you can do some things as an entrepreneur on Google and Alphabet's dime that you can't do any other way, just in terms of sheer scale. And sheer access to talent and smart people. That was the process for joining X.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, I can feel that you are just, yeah, I can feel you have questions, you have comments, and you're just dying to ask Clarence questions.
It's the confluence, as he said, of an established organization that knows that building new businesses, building new entrepreneurial efforts is hard, and it requires capital to grow. It requires long-term vision, an investment that's not going to pay off next quarter, not going to pay off 4 quarters from now necessarily, but could pay off big in 10 quarters, and that's okay because along the way, other things could be profitable. I mean, every business worth its salt has things that come out of it, you know, whether that's development of human resources or whether that's development of properties, products that people want to buy. This is fascinating,
and the
man.
Bar is
That's
very
great.
High. Yeah. No, the bar is very high for Alphabet, which is Google's parent company. You know, they're looking to impact that over a billion people and build trillion-dollar businesses, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alphabet itself, Google, is worth maybe $1.8 trillion, and so to move the needle for Google and Alphabet, it has to be a big bet. And therefore we call those things moonshots.
Right. Wow. This is but especially what's happening with X is that it seems like they're targeting down. They're saying you can't find these things well developed. You've got to look low my metaphor is you've got to look low. You've got to look for young entrepreneurs. You've got to look where the new ideas are coming from, or you're not going to find them.
and you also need diverse perspectives.
Right.
So, yes. So all of the above, you're 100% correct.
Wow. This is very exciting. This is very good for Manhattan Beach in general to be a part of the Manhattan Beach milieu of business entrepreneurs. Kelly has story after story after story. One of my favorite stories is Kelly board wax. Someone making board wax for surfboards. When a pandemic hits, people stop buying board wax for surfboards. So what do? They reorient their whole process into making soap. Who am I talking about, Kelly?
You're talking about Hogan Peters from the founder of You Surf Wax, and you know, he started out. I don't know if you've met him yet, Clarence. I know recently you embarked on a couple surf lessons and embracing the South Bay and Manhattan Beach culture. But You Surf Wax is a young man entrepreneur who graduated a couple years ago from LMU University, just, you know, a few minutes north of Manhattan Beach. He's a New York transplant, and his father told him when he graduated, congratulations, Hogan, if you want to stay in California, then you need to figure out how to support yourself. And you're welcome to stay in California, but you got to figure out how to support yourself. And so he was told that before he graduated. And so he, in his dorm room at LMU, started making surf wax. And he has a passion for the environment and a love for the ocean and keeping it clean. And so he was making it out of beeswax, and which is a healthier surf wax than some. Sure. Right. And still does. And, you know, he makes it and packages it and got a really fun label, all in El Porto, which is, you know, the surf center of the South Bay. And during the pandemic, when the beaches were closed, the water was, you couldn't do anything. You know, you could walk in the street and that was it. You couldn't even walk on the strand. Obviously, his business was compromised. And so he quickly pivoted to making soap, basically with the same mold and packaging, and then donating it into to all the food banks and I can't think of the word, but food pantry, like El Camino College, all the students, all of a sudden everybody didn't have an income, unemployed, and so he started donating soap. So people have soap. And
soap. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, he went from surfboard wax to soap. Yeah.
Yes. No. That's creativity at its best. Necessity
it was wonderful.
Is the mother's
invention. Yes, exactly. And I would say, I can't wait, Clarence, for you to meet this guy. He has the gene. There's white, black, indifferent. It doesn't matter. There's some people that just have that spark that you could put them into any environment and say, create a business that generates income, and you've got, you know, 30 days. And he could do it. It just he has that gene. It's just amazing to even just talk with him and about whatever he's doing, his latest thing. And he's great. I can't wait. There needs to be a Manhattan Beach sort of like entrepreneurial council that talks about new businesses and it's just exciting what can be happening in the South Bay.
Well, I'm going to connect you. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying entrepreneurs are usually interesting and exciting people. I'm a little biased.
Right.
So I love meeting entrepreneurs. So I look forward to meeting him for sure.
Yeah, I'll introduce you to Hogan, too, because maybe he can get you out surfing also. But what Hogan has is what your advice was, is to follow your passion. Because his passion sustained him during the pandemic and sustained his ability to continue living in Southern California. And by the way, he comes from the East Coast and a hockey background. So he also started selling the surf wax to hockey players here in California for their sticks, because I didn't know, but they wax their sticks for games. And so he kind of has, you know, it's just dominoed from one thing to the other. But his passion, you know, was being an entrepreneur, his ocean, and playing hockey. And all of that has sustained him. And here he is still now back to, you know, making surf wax and hockey right. stick wax, I guess you could say, too. So anyways, Joe, we have one
yeah.
minute. This happens every single week. The conversation could go for hours and hours, but we have one
this
minute, so we have
special.
To wrap it up.
This one is special, ladies and gentlemen. RevitalizeVentures.com. RevitalizeVentures.com. The best things in life come from the South Bay. The best things in life come from the South Bay. RevitalizeVentures.com. Clarence, thank you so much for joining us. Clarence Wooten, thank you.
And thank you for promoting Revitalize. I couldn't have done it better myself. this has been wonderful. Thank you, guys. And I'm excited to be here, and I look forward to running into you guys around town.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fantastic. Kelly, this was good. Thank you very much, Kelly.
It's my pleasure. It's always a pleasure. And Clarence, thanks for taking your time. I can't wait to talk to you in 6 months, a year, 2 years from now. And you know, I'll see you around anyways, but get you back on the show and find out what you're up to, because you
yeah.
are a special person that has, you know, you are an asset to our area in Manhattan Beach. So thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you so much.
We'll see everyone soon. Bye-bye. Have a great weekend, everyone. See you soon. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.